From KQED Public Radio, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly podcast about politics and public policy, and lately only the state budget. That's all we talk about.
What else is there?
What else is there, apparently, for you and me and every other reporter?
What is there except a budget, except that there is no budget? This is like a Buddhist riddle.
Okay, well, before you go too far down that, I'm John Myers from KQED. That is Anthony York, the resident big thinker, editor of Capital Weekly over there. And he is a big thinker, which we're going to talk about in a moment.
Buddhist riddler.
Yeah, you don't know how big of a thinker he is until you hear the news flash that we've got. So this is we're recording this on Monday morning. Whenever you get to hear this lovely podcast, we'll have it up online soon. But, of course, if you're one of those people who happens to, like, load this to an iPod and, I don't know, do your yard work while you're listening to Capitol Notes, this may be completely outdated if you wait too many days.
Happy President's Day.
Happy President's Day. So we spent the entire weekend here at the Capitol, nothing like a Valentine's Day, watching a budget debate. But we watched... Oh, let's see. We came in Saturday evening, right? About 7?
Five. Well, originally it was 9 a.m. Saturday. Then it was about
5 and then 7.
Right.
So we came in the evening. We went all night. Some of us did. York went home.
I monitored remotely and had a...
You went home, though.
I had a lovely Valentine's Day with my wife.
Yeah, you went home. That really is unfair. I did not.
No.
My wife doesn't like me. So we were here all Saturday night. It was an all-nighter into Sunday morning. He took a break Sunday morning, still trying to find the deal, and then they came back Sunday afternoon. And then by Sunday night, they decided everybody was, in fact, tired, newsflash, and so they went home for a few hours, and then they're coming back today. So, all right, so if you're following this and you listen to our podcast, you know the basic headlines. $40 billion solution, $42 billion solution, really, because it's got the reserve in it, plus I'm rounding numbers, you know.
Yeah.
But hey, those are details. 14 and change billion in taxes, 15 billion in spending reductions, about 10 or 11 billion in borrowing, give or take $1 billion. Hey, you know,
hey, at this point,
it's $1 billion. Come on. But it's a combination: cuts, taxes, borrowing, and still not enough Republican votes, though we're down to like one,
right?
One vote.
And we thought we had it.
But let's talk about who would vote for it, though. Talk about who would vote for it at this point.
Well, the people who we think are voting for it are the all 24 Democrats. There's one vacancy. All 24 Democrats in the Senate, plus the Senate Republican leader, Dave Cogdell of Fresno, plus Senator Roy Ashburn, who is termed out
from Bakersfield.
That brings us to 26.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the Assembly, let's go to the Assembly. Who's voting for it in the
Assembly? In the Assembly, we have all 51 Democrats.
Which will be an interesting vote, but we'll get
right
to that.
In the Assembly Republican leader, Mike Vallines of Clovis. The budget vice chairman, the ranking Republican on the budget committee, Roger Nilo of Fair Oaks, Sacramento. And Anthony Adams, Republican from Hesperia.
Yes,
is that right?
I think that's right. Nice.
Wow.
You've read your red book.
Oof,
good job.
A sophomore and who, you know, ironically perhaps was considered one of the more conservative members of a very conservative caucus, but has since earned his place among the outcasts of the Republican caucus and the Republican diehards for
the heads on a stick.
Yes.
A group is...
That's another podcast.
No, well, but I mean, it refers to the, you know, the talk radio guys in L.A., John and Ken, who have some picture of heads on a stick.
Yes.
All right, well, let's...
Not to be confused with hot dog on a stick, which are delicious.
I don't like hot dog.
Me
like
neither, that, actually. I just...
Breaded hot dog.
Well, yeah.
Anyway.
it's corn dog.
Way too early in the morning. Okay, but the Assembly, it's worth talking about the Assembly quickly because we've got to get to the whole Senate. That was the whole...
The drama.
That was the drama all weekend long. But those three Republicans, Vallines, the leader, you had to assume he was going to put up his vote. He negotiated the deal to as best he could, I think, as he would probably say. Nilo, the vice chairman of the Republican, vice chairman of the Budget Committee, not a bad choice for two reasons. One, he never took the pledge that said he wouldn't raise taxes.
Right.
So there's no pledge on paper because he says he doesn't take pledges, which is, you know, fair enough. And then also, I would argue, and this is because I did a piece on Roger Nilo's district, for my redistricting coverage last fall. Nilo's got a pretty split district of Democrats and Republicans. It's not like he's got some hugely Republican district that will put his head on a stick if he voted for taxes. And he represents a lot of state workers who probably want to see this deal passed.
Right. So, although, remember, he would have to survive a closed Republican primary, which...
Assuming he would have to do that. I mean, I guess you're assuming that the people who vote for these are all going to get primary challenges?
Yes.
Okay. That's not a bad assumption. Yeah. And then the third one, Anthony Adams, who kind of telegraphed that he might be willing to do this in some news reports, I don't know, a week, 10 days ago, something like that, which got him a whole lot of nastiness from some fellow Republicans. But, you know, we'd kind of heard his name for a while.
Right.
So no terrible surprises on the Assembly side. On the Senate side, Cogdill, the Republican leader, again, we figured he'd put up his own vote. Ashburn, who's termed out and has kind of been seen as a possible swing several times.
And some of that's personal. Senator Ashburn has had his personal conflicts with the Republican with a faction of Republicans inside his caucus. It's been going on for years. So.
So that kind of makes him a maverick then.
Yes.
Okay. And then the third vote, the infamous drum roll third vote. Well, we don't know who the third vote's going to be. Two targets.
That's why we're here.
Why we're here and why we have not wrapped up the budget. There were two targets all weekend long. Dave Cox, Republican senator from Fair Oaks, from the Sacramento suburbs, and Abel Maldonado, Republican state senator from Santa Maria down on the Central Coast.
Right.
First, the target was Cox. Then the target was Maldonado. I mean, you tell me, again, let's just back out of the chronology there for a moment. What happened?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, somebody didn't count right, or somebody's. I think Cogdill and the Senate leader, Daryl Steinberg, both get some of the blame here for not counting to 27 properly. Cogdill, I mean, you talk to Cogdill and his staff, and they thought they had a deal with Cox. They thought they had a deal with Senator Cox because you remember 2 days before the vote, when the initial deal was cut, Maldonado was quoted as saying the budget vote was, quote, an easy no. It was an easy no vote. So there was an indication there that he was not going to vote for the thing.
Right.
And so speculation immediately focused on Cox. And Cox was one of only three Republican senators who had not lambasted the budget publicly. And so it was just assumed that Dave Cox was going to be the 27th vote. Well, lo and behold, somewhere in the wee hours on Friday night, it didn't quite go that way.
Yeah, I mean, and what we don't know without, you know, digging into the handful of people who know this for a fact is we don't know whether they misread Cox's signals or whether Senator Cox changed his mind.
Right.
But it was pretty emphatic. I think it was like 2 or 3 in the morning. I lose track at that point on Saturday morning, where Senator Cox, emphatically told a group of reporters, I was standing there with, no, nope, I don't need to see anything else. I don't need to talk to anybody else. I'm not conflicted. No.
And he apparently had a wish list, right? There were some reports going around that he wanted some change to the way some tobacco tax money is used under Proposition 10.
Yeah, which has been a long thing for him, which is part of this budget deal that we could talk about. But
and apparently some changes were made, but not all of the changes that he wanted. And you were there in the wee hours there on Sunday morning. I don't know the exact chronology of when some of the changes were made and when the deal fell apart.
Yeah. What he wanted, and for those of you who didn't follow this part, I mean, he has had a long crusade, I guess is one way to call it, against the Proposition 10 tobacco taxes, not necessarily the taxes, though maybe he wouldn't like those, but where they're being spent, which is the First Five Commission for Early Childhood Development. Some of the money is spent by a state commission. Some is spent in every county by county First Five Commissions. Senator Cox the only word that comes to my mind, he may not have ever uttered it, but I think he kind of characterizes it as a boondoggle. You know, he basically thinks that the money's not spent on the right things and that we should redirect some of those tobacco tax revenues to help solve the budget problems. And he was the first guy who talked about that, and then his fellow Republicans had it in their proposal weeks ago. Then the governor adopted it as part of his proposal on New Year's Eve, that budget proposal we got.
And the
whole notion started slowly taking shape that, yes, we might go back and ask the voters to let us borrow some of the tobacco tax money or borrow it or redirect it.
But in the final deal, some of the tobacco tax money is redirected.
Yeah.
It's redirected specifically for child for childhood health programs because the money is earmarked for early childhood development.
Right. And so the theory is that you spend it on that and therefore it frees up money that the state would spend elsewhere.
Right.
And so, as you asked, the question is, did he not think it was enough money? Did he want some other changes? He put some amendments out late Saturday night across the desk in the Senate for a bigger Prop 10 commitment.
Right.
And those got rejected. But the buzz at the time was that he was probably okay with some of the modifications they were willing to make to the tobacco tax package. But again, that wasn't enough.
It didn't happen. And so then the focus magically redirected itself back.
Magically.
Back to Abel Maldonado. And Maldonado met with reporters out in the hallway there early on Sunday morning. It was midday, but he had
a meeting of about an hour with the governor, as he said at that time when we were in that scrum of reporters, and said it was a good meeting, but governor didn't ask for his vote, just said, what do you need?
But through his quotes, Maldonado made it clear that he was back in play, that he was
the door's open.
Mm-hmm. Right. The question is what Maldonado wanted in the budget package in order to get a yes vote, and there were all sorts of stories going around.
Yeah, what did you hear? I mean, here's the warning. Here's the rumor part of the podcast.
Right.
Rumor alert. But what did you hear?
And you can read more about these rumors on CapitalWeekly.net.
Yes. CapitalRumorWeekly.net. No, go ahead.
That's what we traffic in. First and foremost was the open primary. Maldonado, a moderate Republican by most measures, who has voted for budgets in the past and who ran who lost in a closed primary for state controller, closed Republican primary, to Tony Strickland, now his Senate colleague, who is one of the emphatic no votes on this budget. Maldonado still harbors statewide ambitions. He's taken some shots at the current controller, John Chung, a Democrat. There are some indications and allegations that he would like to run again and that he would like an open primary to ease his path, at least towards getting the Republican nomination. The open primary is something that the governor supported in the past. The irony, of course, is that the legislature, was it 4 years ago? Losing track, 4 years ago, put an initiative on the ballot that voters eventually approved, Proposition 60, which was a closed primary initiative. So now Maldonado wants...
Yeah, it was longer than a few years back, but I'm with you. Go ahead.
That wants the very legislature that put the closed primary initiative on the ballot to now reopen it.
Right. And
that is, I think, strongly opposed, fair to say, by both political parties and would have a hard time getting votes in any of the four legislative caucuses.
Right.
But apparently that was on Maldonado's ask list.
There was also, wasn't there the proposal... Or there was the proposal, according to the rumors. Now I'm going to join you in Rumor Fest. But another one that he had an interest in that you heard a lot about this weekend was to place on the ballot a measure that says that the legislature doesn't get a budget on time, it doesn't get paid. No budget, no pay, as it's called around the Capitol. Which, I mean, I think that would pass with the greatest margin in the history of California. That would be, what, a 99.9 to... I think the only 120 no votes would be from the legislature.
119, although we'll get to that.
Oh, sorry, we'll get to that. But yeah, so no budget, no pay. And that was the buzz was that he would want to put that on there, which you could argue could make him look like a champion of those kind of issues, which could raise his statewide profile if he wanted to run for office there again. Now, whether either of those were really things he asked for or just talked about or things that he hasn't interested in, we don't know what the nuance was.
Well, and the interesting thing is, the governor is talking about some sort of primary reform for the 2010 ballot. If the legislature puts it on the ballot, it would show up on the next election, and there's a special election under this budget agreement. There would be a special election in May. And so by
May 19th, by the way.
So by getting the open primary on the special election ballot, it would be in place for 2010 instead of if it's on the 2010 ballot, it wouldn't be in place until 2012, and that would be too late for Controller Maldonado.
Well, and I think that also makes the odds lower of getting that because, then it's a game changer for existing lawmakers even more than, say, it's on the ballot in 2010. Some people might be termed out, yada, yada, yada.
Right. And you can talk about what the partisan makeup of a May election might be and whether that would decrease the odds of the measure passing, but that's another podcast.
Yeah.
We don't need to traffic in those kinds of hypotheticals.
We've got plenty of them right here in River City.
Yeah.
So that was the intrigue that we had with who was going to vote for it, and we still don't know. We're sitting here, I don't know, an hour, a couple of hours actually before the legislature goes back into session. We don't know if Maldonado is going to get on board. We don't know if they go back to Cox. I've heard rumors back and forth. We don't know if they can find somebody else, which I think is unlikely that they find somebody else, or no.
There's been a name that's been floated, but no indication that
even
that
you
senator,
are not going to put that rumor out.
Okay. You know, I don't want this guy's his head to be on a stick.
On a stick on that website. You know, it's interesting. Maldonado was looking at that website overnight, and during the lockdown session, I looked on his laptop on his desk on the floor of the Senate, and there he's looking, and a couple of other lawmakers are looking at this graphic of all these heads on a stick, Arnold Schwarzenegger and all these others, and they're acutely aware of what's going on out there. I mean, that's another thing that's interesting too is that there is no time lag anymore between outrage or criticism or whatever or analysis and the legislature. Blackberries, right.
Instant information.
Instant Blackberry John laptops.
John Meyer's budget Twitter feed.
I was Twittering. I might Twitter some more.
It was the main window into budget information in the wee hours.
Goes to show how few windows there are, because I was relegated to Twittering about finding candy in my bag at one point. But there really is no – I mean, it's instantaneous reaction, instantaneous and I think that has got to make this process that much harder. Somebody says – and, the rumor mill spreaders, you gossipers, you. But no, but if somebody says, oh, so-and-so might do X, and then it's out there on Blackberries instantaneously, and then what impact does that have on negotiations? It's
– Well, and it was interesting. You saw the Sacramento Bee step into this foray in the
great
on Sunday. The Sacramento Bee sent out a breaking news alert, and it was an online editorial urging their readers to call Dave Cox and urge him to vote yes on the budget and, quote, become a hero. And didn't work out so well. Cox apparently read the editorial and was, not impressed.
Understatement of the year.
And anybody who's familiar with Senator Cox or his demeanor probably would know that he wouldn't take kindly to that sort of pressure. And I think that was part of what hardened his resolve and why, right after that editorial came out, I spoke briefly to Senator Steinberg in the hallway, and Cox was off the table. It was all the focus was on Maldonado.
Yeah, I mean, those things can just instantly change things. I want to talk about the package a moment, because I don't know that we did. Did we talk about the budget deal, the budget proposal last time?
In general terms, 15.
I've lost track with the lack of sleep.
And if this thing is changing, then maybe we should hold off on the details. But.
Well, we have one big bombshell that we've kept alluding to that we'll talk about in a moment. But before we get to the bombshell, nothing like a tease there. I wanted to talk just about the proposal itself, because there's been a lot of discussion about one interesting maybe misstep by the legislature and the governor in crafting this proposal. And that is the attachment of the spending cap to the tax increases. Now, the spending cap, if you don't know, is largely it's a way to limit future spending by state government, and it has some way that you take a 10-year average of all the previous 10 years before, and you get an average of how much revenue came in, and therefore that's your new limit on how much you can spend. I don't need to go into that. That's a policy issue that, we're just too punchy right now to try to figure out. But the spending cap would go on the ballot. If the voters said yes, then all the temporary taxes that have been proposed would last for 5 years.
Instead of two.
Well, I was going to say that, They would last for 5 years. If the spending cap is rejected, the taxes would only last for 2 years.
Right.
Now, the theory inside the gilded Capitol dome was that by letting the taxes stay longer, if the spending cap passes, that interest groups would have less incentive to knock the spending cap down at the ballot and would have, basically would let the spending cap pass because they'd get more tax revenue.
Right.
That's a great theory inside the dome. Outside the dome goes the argument, and I think this is a very fair argument. Outside the dome, a voter can say, gee, if I approve this spending cap, my taxes are going to be higher for longer. I'm going to vote no.
Right.
So it has the unintended consequence, perhaps.
Whether or not it was unintended is a matter of some debate.
Sorry. Well, I was going to say you can talk about that part, but it has the effect of chilling the interest in it. And if in fact it was intended, then it goes again to the theory of Republicans and others that this was a bad deal, that they should not be voting
for. And a lot of conservatives have said just that this has been gamesmanship on the part of the Democrats who authored this spending cap as knowing that voters are not going to want to increase their taxes. And you can just envision the scenario. You know, the state employee unions are adamantly, very strongly opposed to the spending cap, and they've been the main people pushing for higher taxes to close this budget gap. You can envision a scenario in May where you have the labor unions running a campaign that says vote against this spending cap because a vote for the spending cap is a vote for higher taxes. I mean, the irony, right? The irony of that campaign wouldn't be lost on a handful of insiders up here in Sacramento, but could be an effective message towards killing that spending cap proposal.
And there really are very few people who like that spending cap proposal so far. I mean, we really haven't completely poured through the details of it. And the details are going to be important because that is the lasting legacy of this budget debate. You know, the deficits will come and go. The revenues will go up and go down in the state. The spending limit would be here to stay in the Constitution.
Yeah.
But there are not a lot of people who like it on the left or the right. The right doesn't think it's strong enough. The left thinks it's too strong. And then, you've got all these things about how long the taxes last and, possible gamesmanship.
Right.
And now, it could have been unintentional. It could have been a mistake. It could have been an error.
It may have been well-intentioned.
Well, yeah, but my point is it could have been an error. You're stepping on my transition.
Oh, I thought you were.
It could have been something overlooked.
Oh, yes.
See? You see my transition?
I see where you're going.
Yeah, the audience doesn't yet, but stay with us, folks. It could have been overlooked, but this morning, in a fit of duty to his state? What would you call your actions this morning?
I mean, sleep-deprived, budget overload, delirium.
Yeah. So in a fit of that, I can't repeat that, our good friend Anthony York wakes from his bed, rises from his bed, trudges himself through his house. You have a copy of the Constitution of California lying around your house?
On my bed.
Do you really?
Under my pillow.
Under your pillow. So it absorbs. Article 5, Section 2, subsection
Article 4,
A.
Section 7, but that's okay.
Oh, sorry. Well, I was just being broad, but now you really know which
one
we're about to talk about.
I was kidding.
Somebody's going to call you on that now. So Anthony pulls out his copy of the California Constitution. I'm trying to set it up for you so you can be the big guy here.
And what
happens?
Well, and I did a little math, and it occurs to me that the focus has been on getting the 27th vote in the state Senate because budgets need a 2/3 majority to pass. There are 40 members of the Senate, 40 seats, and 2/3 of 40 is 26 point something something, and so you would need 27. However, there is a vacancy in South Los Angeles, the 26th. Senate district, I believe, vacated when Mark Ridley Thomas left his Senate seat to assume a seat on the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors. And so there are only 39 members of the Senate now, and 2/3 of 39 is 26. So I guess it depends on what your definition of membership is. Is it sitting members or is it total number of seats? Do we need 2/3 of 40? Would be 27, or do we need 2/3 of 26?
Is it existing bodies or existing positions in the chamber?
And that is a matter for the lawyers to decide. But and perhaps this has already been people have gone over this, but it was new to me, and so just throwing it out there.
It's your understanding after making a couple of phone calls that it is going to get reviewed, or it's being reviewed, or it's been reviewed. It's kind of hard to know which.
The legislative council, which is the lawyers for the legislature, are looking at this apparently now.
Yeah.
The other possible scenario, if this goes on a month, is that theoretically all these bills could start in the assembly and pass with the 2/3, 54 votes in the assembly. However, the election to fill that vacancy for the 26th district is being held in March. One of the members, the front runner for that seat is Curran Price, an assembly member from that area. Curran Price could theoretically vote for the budget in the assembly.
Yep.
And then be elected to the Senate be sworn into the Senate as moving over with the bills and then cast the 27th vote as a senator.
You vote twice.
And I'm sure that one might be challenged, too. I don't know why he wouldn't be able to do that, but...
That's a heck of a long time to wait, though, for the budget. I mean, there would be a lot of crumbling of financial things.
I asked the speaker about this last night. I asked Karen Bass about this, and she said, no, this was not an option. Right. But, you know, for those of us that are covering a news event without news for too long, this is where our mind goes.
Well, I want to go back to your first one, though, because... All of this is about interpretation of the law.
Right.
And we spent a few weeks about this interpretation of a tax increase and the Democrats having this proposal that they could, raise revenue with a majority-only vote.
It was not a tax increase.
It was not a tax increase. I know. It was
it was a revenue-neutral
yes.
fee package.
The point is, it was an increase in revenues.
Yes.
And that was an interpretation of the law.
That's generous.
Yeah, well, it was an interpretation. The point is
skirting.
This is an interpretation of the law, right. and it's fascinating to me. I mean, because if that could hold up, we'd be done today.
Yeah.
We'd be over. Yeah. I mean, and then what would happen to Senator Maldonado if he's been asking for particular things to get his vote? I think he'd be my father has a phrase. I don't think even I'm going to say it on the podcast, but he'd be out of luck. That's right. Part of the luck.
Up a creek without a paddle?
Yeah. It's the same creek and the same kind of luck that he would be out of or over.
Yeah.
Or in.
There's a Clint Eastwood line, right?
Something like that. So it's fascinating. So you may have solved the budget crisis.
Wait, does that mean I get my head on a stick?
Exactly. John and Ken in Los Angeles will be calling for the removal of Anthony York. Maybe they could petition your editor. No, wait, that's you.
Yeah, it's probably publisher.
The publisher would be your parents. Would your parents fire you?
I wouldn't put it past them.
Okay, we'll call them and ask them how that goes. So tune in later this week to see if Anthony has solved the budget crisis. That's like a serial, like a drama. Tune in next time. Will Anthony solve the budget crisis?
Get your secret Capital Weekly decoder ring.
All right, so we think we're going to do a podcast at the end of the week when the budget – well, we think the budget crisis will be over by the end of the week. Frankly, if it's not over at the end of the week, we may have to evaluate whether it's worth doing another one, unless you want to hear intrigue. You can let me know as I
– We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'll Twitter you and let you know what's going on with that.
I'll be following the KQED Twitter. Is it the John Myers
it's
Twitter
Twitter.com/KQED_capnotes.
We were forced to emulate
at
Capital Weekly.
Did you?
I've been doing stuff with our Facebook status, our Capital Weekly Facebook page, and so now with Twitter automatically updates your Facebook status. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. You can get a little Facebook app, but we can talk about this off the air.
You are quite the geek. Not only do you read the Constitution, but you know all about this stuff. Okay, well, stick around, folks, and see what happens on the budget when we come back next time. So for Anthony York, the genius at Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.